and despairs of your waste and short-sightedness.
Well, maybe I can convince him we're not as bad as the Govani, I offered weakly.
Mayhap, agreed Italia skeptically. Friendlier to your folk is likely to be Rare Micrithiel, mistress of Nandororiel. Though not a powerful stronghold, she is nonetheless very respected for her deep wisdom. Rare Letheran will be less inclined to be sympathetic to the duchess. He once admired the Humani, but after your ancestors destroyed the Majocracy, you fell from his favour. He shut his realm's gates against your folk ever since. Even worse is Aronin Radas. She never favoured your folk's grant to so much of our realm, and hated the chaos you brought, even as she rejoiced in the beauty of your trees.
But she has nothing directly against us, I asked, pressing for some context to make this information useful. I was playing for all of humanity here. I needed to know to whom I was speaking. Nothing personal.
I would not know such things, Italia said reluctantly. I am only recently come under the eye of such powers, but the Lady of the Grove cannot ignore the threat that the abomination poses, and that her realm would soon be troubled by it. There are other powers at council as well. Many smaller refuges will send representatives to Master Harotel's invitation, but those are the great houses, the ones most likely to dominate the council.
The council is to determine how to fight the abomination then, I summarized. Italia stopped, and then started walking again.
No, Mage Lord. The council is to examine the appearance of the abomination, the resulting loss of our refuges to his attacks, and other recent changes in the duchies, including your own rise to power.
There was something she wasn't telling me, I could tell. But that's not all, is it?
Mage Lord, perhaps it would be best for you to save your questions for the council. I am but their emissary.
I'd irritated an Alka Alon. My day was complete. The lass is grumpy today, Master Guri grunted from behind me somewhere. The Karshak Alon Stonesinger, who had built the spire and who was now building my new castle, trudged along wearing some outlandish garb, including an ornate apron and a ridiculous high-crowned hat. Dara giggled. This is the ceremonial outfit of a stonesinger, I'd asked him when he'd first shown up at the Great Hall unexpectedly that morning, dressed so flamboyantly. I was intrigued. And why are you going?
Yes, it is. And because of orders, he said gruffly.
From the Alka Alon.
From my elders in the lodge. Just technical stuff, but they want a report made to the council and I got elected. Selected, actually.
He sounded simultaneously proud and disgusted.
Two lifetimes of work to do here, and they have me attending bloody banquets.
I certainly didn't mind the gruff stone singer's company on the trip. Guri had become a trusted friend and adviser. I'd allowed his folk free rein of the Snowstone Mountain, which they were as excited over as the Alka Alon, though for different reasons. My trust had paid off handsomely. It was some kind of mystical place for them, apparently. That had secured Guri's invaluable assistance, and, it seemed, his loyalty. He'd explored the mountain thoroughly, and had recovered prizes beyond mere snowstone for me. I'd even brought a few of them as gifts to the council. Thalwyn had instructed me that the Alka Alon do not trade. They give gifts. It was traditional to bring a gift to council. If the council was favourable, then they would gift me in return, hopefully in Irionite. That made negotiations with the Alka Alon a bit frustrating, from our perspective. It's hard to complain about a gift, but I suppose that was the idea. Lady Italia led us the rest of the way to the summit in silence, while I tried to keep track of who the principals were in my head. The top of Matten's Helm was now a different world. It was Lesgathiel now, and it was becoming more Lesgathiel every day. The spire complex was on the higher side of the truncated hill, to the northeast. There was a 9-story tower of slender Alka Alon design, made entirely of snowstone, quarried from my mountain, and transported here by Guri's masons, at Alka Alon request. The graceful spire towered over the small complex below, which acted as a kind of hostelry and meeting place between our two races. Lesgathiel was functionally the Alcaalan embassy, and while I had witnessed its speedy, magically aided construction by the Karshak Alon, I was still amazed every time I saw it up close. It was adorned with trees and plants of all varieties, but clearly favoured were those especially loved by the Alka. In the centre of the elegant courtyard, the single tree they had planted first was thriving, 10 feet tall now, producing a kind of mysterious light on its own. Alcan mage lights, each one a pale blue teardrop shape, studded the exterior of their spire and provided illumination just a little above full moonlight. Overhead, their beacon floated. The entire palace was filled with the feeling of magic. The very stones seemed to sing their joy of being privileged to be here. We were interrupted by Pentandra and Lady Varen, the third Alcaalan ambassador, who shimmered into existence near their special tree. Lady Varen was her normal self and naked. Pentandra was dressed in Romeran-styled formality, a long gown of red and gold satin with a matching, perky headdress. She bore the staff of the order, an ornately gaudy stick of office I was supposed to carry at official functions. I had left it in a closet in my quarters in Castabriel, but she had thoughtfully remembered the useless thing for me, as well as my equally awful official funny hat.
"I thought you might need these,"
she said sweetly, as she pushed them into my hands.
"It is your first official appearance before the Alka Council, as head of the human arcane orders, after all. Try to make a good impression. Please assume places around the perimeter of the circle,"
Italia said, leading us to the smooth-cut flags that surrounded their special tree. I put my toes on the crack and nodded. Pentandra and Dara, to the left and right of me, did likewise. I heard the others grunt their readiness, then there was a flash, a twist, a moment of terror, and I suddenly smelled mountains. Chapter 3. The Council of Carnaduin. Not mountains, as in the little hills that passed for such in the Uwaris, but mountains. Giant slabs of solid stone, rising hundreds and hundreds of feet into the air. The Kulines, I could tell by the sweet piney aroma. The fresh air was like a sharp slap in the face. We were in the Kulin range, somewhere, hundreds of miles north of Sevendor. It was cooler, and the sun was at a different angle.
"Welcome to the Vale of Carnaduin,"
Italia bid us, bowing graciously in welcome.
"It has been an age since an official embassy from the Humani has been here. Far too long. Let us show you to your quarters, and then we shall greet the master of the hall, Lord Arafel, as is fit for visitors. He wishes to see the spellmonger first."
I didn't look at her. I was too busy trying to look at everything else. Carnaduin was stunning. It was stately and sublime, beautiful and casual all at the same time. We had appeared on the northern side of a river valley that ran east to west for several miles in both directions. Below us, the bottom land was not farmed, exactly, not in the human fashion. Instead, there were clusters of Tal Alon burrows, scattered almost at random across it, punctuated by groves of trees of every variety. Here and there were little pavilions of elegant design, made of timber, stone, or living wood. Birds soared majestically past us in the air, and mountain night stars floated along with the currents the other way, heading back to the treetops after a busy night spent capturing insects in their pouches. And the music. Not only were the Alcaalan singing a hauntingly beautiful, nameless tune, but deep, rich sounds rang out from below with every gust of breeze. Not voices, but something else. Wind harps. I'd heard of them. Read of them, actually, in the epics of the treefolk. Giant structures of wood and glass and steel, enchanted to respond to the mood and temper of every gentle breeze. I gazed at them through mage sight. Each erupted in a fountain of brightly colored magic.
"Oh, my,"
Pentandra finally managed to say. Dara held both hands over her mouth. Master Guri was staring, wide-eyed, and shaking his big, shaggy head in disbelief.
"We are in luck,"
Lady Varen said softly. The sun has just risen. We will be able to hear the day's lords as we walk.
Lords? Asked Dara, swallowing.
Like in a temple?
Something like that,
agreed Lady Varen, after considering. It was nothing like that. As the first rays of the sun smote the tallest peaks on the northern side of the valley, the song began. Every voice, every Alka Alon, and there had to be thousands, stopped what they were doing and sang the Lords. Like a whisper in a dream, it was almost imperceptible at first. One voice answered another, then duos and trios began contending for prominence. And then whole choruses erupted in mighty chords around us, echoing against the great cliffs and rolling across the water like fine mist. Every song a spell, every spell a song. That was the lore about the magic of the Alka Alon. The magical effects of the hymn were intense. Powerful tensions were released in the magosphere around us. I could feel my Irionite sphere vibrate. From within the song came a powerful feeling of refreshment and renewal, the promise of dawn and new beginnings. It was majestic as well as magical. I had a feeling that sort of thing happened here all the time. I was still marveling over the melodious exuberance when some tiny part of my brain caught on to something. It was as we were passing a small group of tree folk who were tending or cleaning or worshipping a small grove of nearly white-leaved trees, when I watched them sing their part of the Lords before instantly returning to work. The smoothness of the transition was preternatural. I had noticed a similar thing with how the Karshak Alon worked together. With them I had suspected it was a matter of discipline, but now I was not so sure. It was a matter of magical coordination, I realized. I'd witnessed a similar effect among the Karshak Alon during the construction of Lesgathiel, and had written it off as a talent or discipline inherent to the miners and masons. Now I was not so sure, as I watched the Alka Alon at work. There was no arguing or discussion before beginning work. There was no encouragement or exhortation. Each Alkan simply knew what his or her part was and when to do it. It was the exact same effect as the Karshak had demonstrated when they were building something. I'd watched them toss around planks and blocks, tools and sacks, with not just impressive dexterity, but with absolute perfect coordination. The Alka Alon who were tending the grove moved with similar alacrity. I think I must have halted there on the walkway, because Dara almost ran into me. I resumed walking at once, and contacted Pentandra mind to mind. Penny, ever notice how the Karshak and the Alka work together almost flawlessly, without any of the traditional human shouting and arguing?
I'd never watched the Karshak, she admitted, but now that you mention it, the Alka Alon seem really good at digging and planting and pruning, like it's all been pre-choreographed.
Let's look into that, I proposed. Quietly, of course, but that's interesting.
Italia and Varen led us to a snug hostel near the tower that seemed to be fashioned with taller visitors in mind, and presented each of us with a tidy little bedroom chamber off a common hall. The accommodations were simple, elegant and gorgeous, like everything else in that incredible place. We took a few moments to refresh ourselves before Italia and Varen patiently escorted us to a nearby hall. A few dozen Alka Alon mingled and served themselves fruits and drink from a low table at the center of the hall, while they waited for their opportunity to speak at council.
This is the Hall of the Wise. We can relax here and await our summons,
Italia said, a little anxiously.
The council meets in a chamber across the corridor.
I pictured more guards and such, I mused, as I consigned myself to waiting. With that many important Alka Alon leaders in one place.
This is a safe place, Mage Lord,
Ithalia objected.
And one could argue that the Alka Alon lords within are a far more potent force than any guards who could be stationed outside.
I couldn't argue with that.
The Alka Alon tended to promote their most powerful spell singers to their most powerful positions of secular authority, from what I understood. Being able to master song spells was essential to governing, it was felt, or something like that. But I had never heard of an Alka Alon leader, prince, lord, demigod, or however you wanted to translate their native terms, who wasn't also extremely powerful, personally. The one time I had seen an Alka-Alon lord in battle, I lacked even the context to tell how good he was. But he had stared down Sharul's lifeless eyes and didn't flinch. So that said something.
I still would have posted guards, grunted Master Guri quietly. Classes up the place. I feel like I'm waiting to see a physica, not a rare.
Why do I have to carry all the heavy stuff?
Complained Dara in a similar whisper, with a lot more whine. You're the apprentice, I reminded her. That's your job. She shifted the bag uncomfortably from one shoulder to another. I figured I might as well give her instruction. When I summon you, hand the parcel to Master Guri, I ordered, catching her eye to make sure she understood.
You brought them, then?
Master Guri smiled, knowingly. Just a sample, I said conspiratorially. 5 of the little ones.
Ah, that will get them astir, he grinned. I wouldn't even mention the big ones yet.
To what do you refer, Mage Lord?
Asked Lady Varen. Just a small token of our esteem, I promised. She looked at me curiously, but did not ask any further questions. Italia just looked at me nervously. Soon enough, I was called in. I'll say this for the Alka-Alon. They didn't keep me waiting nearly as long as the Duke of Castal had the first time I met Rard. They got essentially the same story he had, that first time I met with him a few years ago in Wilderhall. I was escorted into the room to face 5 singular Alka-Alon, seated on cushions in a circle around an empty space. The one open space was clearly meant for me. Perhaps it was felt, by someone insightful, that being in a circle made us all feel more equal. But that wasn't how I was feeling. I've rarely been under that kind of careful scrutiny before. 5 small pairs of sharp, dark, piercing little eyes looked at me intently. It was disconcerting. One would have thought I was addressing a gang of children, except for those alien eyes. They peered at me, and I knew that they had seen ancient things in ages past, and I was but a mere ephemeral gnat in their minds. If anyone was the child in that room, it was me, and I knew it. They were humoring me, allowing me this moment to inform them the way you would patiently allow a child to recount a tale to learn something of value. I was not fearful. I was merely inadequate. Not even my witch sphere was impressive to these sages. One of them, a male with a face longer than the others and a slightly shaggier mane, stood. He bore a short, plain staff in his hand.
We bid you welcome to our council, Master Minolin, Mage Lord of Sevendor, he said.
I suppose the tone was friendly enough, but the voice was decidedly brassy, like a longhorn, which was also disconcerting.
I am Rhaer Harrowfell, Master of Carnaduin, he said with a bow, and I am the leader of this council today, as well as your host. Please let me know if there is anything that you require. Among you are Lords Aratas, Letharan, and the Ladies Micrethiel and Ladas. We represent the interests of the Alka-Alon in this realm.
Each of them nodded when their name was called. None of them moved otherwise. Deep breath. Time to turn on the charm. I am honored to be among such wise and powerful lords today, I said, bowing slowly from the waist to the group. I hope my testimony will help bring light to a good many things. How may I be of assistance to this worthy council?
It would be helpful if you told us how you first came across Irionite, Master Menelan, Harathel invited. Taking his seat, tell us simply, in your own words.
So I did. It took a while. I told them how I had retired from a life as a mercenary war magi to become a simple village spellmonger in the furthest reaches of the 5 duchies, back among the vales of the Minden Range. I explained how, after 6 months of blissfully boring practice as such, I was awoken one night and forced to defend my village against the vanguard of the goblin invasion, how I had dueled the Gervani shaman and procured a shard of precious Irionite, how the powerful substance had intrigued me enough to seek out the Aranin of Amadia, a nearby treefolk refuge, how I had subsequently hired a small army in the mistaken belief that we could defend the castle against the invasion, and how I had summoned yet more war magi to aid us when it became clear we couldn't, how I had armed each of them with captured Irionite as we fought a losing battle against the besieging goblin legions, how we had discovered the treachery of Sire Kusi's ancestors, and the existence of a sacred Malapar under the castle, how Gurkal, a prisoner of war, became the first Gurvan to see the sacred cavern, how I had used the Malapar and the Irionite to rescue the Bovali peasants, and how I was rescued in turn from the lifeless intelligence behind the goblins' invasion by the Arnin of Amadia's dying act. How I had convinced the Dukes of Castal and Alshar to combine their forces under my command, and we stopped a massive Gavani invasion campaign at Timberwatch. How we then lost most of northern Gilmora to a second advance into the heart of the duchies, where Duke Rad had used the crises as pretext to make himself King Rad, and how we, with Alka Alon assistance, faced down a goblin army and a dragon at Cambrian Castle, and defeated them both. I wasn't going to talk about Snowstone yet. That was my carrot. I wanted them to appreciate the stick. I hadn't just found a witchstone on the ground. I had been fighting a war with them. Of course, they had questions of their own.
"Master Menelan,"
the steely-voiced Alcan Lord Letheran said, his eyes boring holes in my soul,
"you claim you did nothing to stir the Gavani of the Mindans?
Not unless they found curing warts and finding lost cows offensive. I was a simple spellmonger in the hamlet of Minden's Hall, my lords. We were minding our own business when the attacks came, and when they did, they came with Irionite."
"Which you seemed to have no trouble acquiring,"
Lord Aretas observed coolly. "Once you got over the novelty of the higher-pitched voices, their individual personalities started to come through. Lord Aretas clearly had a low opinion of humanity." "Well, the Gavani may have expected a spellmonger, but they got a retired war magi. I improvised, and I got lucky that first time. After that, I consulted the Arunin of Amadia," I reminded him. "He is the one who cleansed my original stone."
"An oversight, if my opinion was to be known?"
Aretas, the lord of the lake city Anthatiel, said.
"To see such tools in the hands of Humani, after what—"
"The Gavani have apparently learned the secret of its creation," Lady Macrethiel observed grimly.
"It is not as if they raided your treasuries for it. The Gavani have no better hope of mastering such forces than the Humani. They invited such disaster to themselves."
"I cannot say which is the worst perversion,"
the Lord of Anthatiel said disgustedly.
"The Gavani making a Kulnuara, or this mage?"
"The worse perversion," I interrupted, "is the undead Gavani shaman whose head lies in the heart of an entire sphere of Irionite, and at the heart of a dark and malignant empire that imperils us all."
"We are aware of the danger the abomination poses,"
said Lord Letheran dryly, "but a few mountain vales and foothill farms hardly constitute an empire. The Gavani have merely made themselves a kingdom in mockery of their human foes." He sounded almost proud about that. "Let them battle it out until they tire of slaying each other." "This is no mere uprising," I corrected. "They aren't fighting with little iron maces, my lords. You don't arm 1,000 shamans with Irionite and raise the dead to lead them, successfully attack and control a Malapar and conjure up some dragons to go to war over domains like gentlemen. Sherul means to slay us all, Humani and Alon alike. He has said as much."
"He has raised an army, such as it is," admitted Letheran, "and his priests are surprisingly effective, given their lack of skill with song. But he has taken a sparsely peopled province, no more. He has scattered a few modest refuges. The loss of Amadia was dear, and for propriety's sake we yet seek for the lost heir of that line, Amaras, to whom the burden now falls. But even that is of small concern."
"Sherul did not stop with his invasion of the Wilderlands. He has raided a thickly peopled province in force," I countered, "and crippled the agricultural heart of the Dutch—the kingdom.
He is marshalling his forces for an even more ambitious attack.
Then wisdom dictates that you see to your defense. But let the squabble not concern us,
the haughty Alcan lord replied. We were not the ones who stirred up the feral Gathani and drove them to such lengths. If they seek your destruction, then I counsel you to defend yourselves.
That's what we're doing, Lord Letheran, I assured him, but that doesn't mean we don't need the help, or that you aren't threatened yourselves. You have already heard about the pillage of your refuges in the Al-Shari wilderness. How long until the dead god's legions are at your gates, not ours?
Until the Gavani learn how to swim, I would not vouchsafe their chances.
And Thaddeel, the lord of fabled Lake City of Rainbows, said, amused.
We understand how troublesome this war is for you, Master Minilan, but the feral Gavani fanatics have done very little, save take vengeance on your folk.
And yours, I reminded him again. They are no lovers of the tree folk. They bear some grudge to the Alka'alon from issues in your own history, from what I understand, I said, trying to be respectful and forceful at the same time. It's harder than it sounds. I felt it was important to remind the arrogant Alcan lord that the feral Gavani were the descendants of the nocturnal servile class that had revolted and freed themselves from the Alka'alon thousands of years ago, and that, as we were learning, the Gavani knew how to hold a grudge.
Regardless of how we arrived at this moment, we are here, Master Harothel conceded. The Gavani resurrected a powerful shaman from their history using Irianite. None could have guessed they would discover the secret to its making. They have such limited connection to magic, as we all know. Worse than the Humani.
And then they armed the magical class with it, reminded Lady Ladas, speaking for the first time. That much power in the hands of former drudges is unthinkable, as bad as seeing it in the fingers of the Humani.
With the power of the dead god's thought behind them, I pointed out, it's a damn sight worse than anything the Arch-Magi ever did.
Which is why this Kul Nuara is an abomination, agreed Harothel. As has been said, the danger of such an unpredictable force in our realm has not been unnoticed. We are resettling refugees from the abomination's attacks, even now. Some refugees are being evacuated as a precaution, but it is hoped by this council that the threat can be contained.
Contained? I asked in disbelief.
For now, agreed Harothel, until we can give it proper consideration.
How can you contain unrestrained, unsleeping hatred? I demanded, despite myself. A hatred so great it casts a shadow on your realm in this world and the other world.
It is powerful. It is not unmanageable, said Lord Letheran.
He sounded almost offended. Tell that to the Aranin of Amadia. As powerful as he was, he and his court were unable to do much at all in the face of the abomination, I reminded them.
A brave and brash act of defiance from one mighty enough to contemplate the meaning of his own sacrifice. The issue is containment, repeated our host, unfazed. For the last year, the abomination has contented itself to remain in its stronghold, sending out forces in its stead. It is possible that it has no higher ambition at the moment than to study the Malapa. Left unmolested, the abomination could take years before it masters the intricacies of the Malapa.
And the council thinks allowing that is wise? I asked skeptically.
As wise, perhaps, as allowing you to keep the Irianite which you have acquired, said Letheran, a necessary evil for a dark time, and one that can be remedied later.
There was no mistaking the menace in his voice. That pissed me off, as if he had a right to determine whether I was able to use the stuff. I won that Irianite in battle, I pointed out. I appreciate the enhancements the Alka'alon gave it, but the Irianite is mine. And I will need it, since it seems I'm the only one inclined to fight the dead god.
Ah, but will you win?
Asked our host, genuinely intrigued by the question.
Imperial magic, however potent, against the unsleeping hatred, as you put it, of a severed head?
I never said the task was going to be easy,
I replied, far more calmly than I felt, just that it needed to be done, and if the tools at hand are inadequate, I will secure better.
You have to admit, he has proven proficient at that,
chuckled Lady Micrethiel. The boldness and ingenuity of Master Menelan is well known. His need seems to outpace the craft of our greatest masters.
Yes, this snow stone,
Lord Eratas said, eyeing me carefully.
Remarkable. You have every night less than 2 years,
and you manage to evoke a substance unimagined by the Alka Alon in 10,000 years.
Just how did one such as you manage such a feat?
There was an accusing tone to his voice. That really nears the realm of craft secrets, my lord, I said, my eyes shifting to each of them in turn. The truth is, I do not know. Precisely. It was a serendipitous accident, but one that might be repeated, if enough study is given to it. Unfortunately, I lack the time, considering my present duties, but I do indeed happen to control a mountain or two of snowstone.
And you think that gives you permission to dictate to this council?
Asked Lord Lethalon sharply. No, my lord. But perhaps that elevates my standing to this council in a way neither my race nor my profession warrant.
This snowstone has intrigued many of us,
agreed our host.
The samples you sent through the emissaries were received with wonder and curiosity. Many uses for them have been found already.
Our research promises yet more secrets await to be discovered.
But will you not tell us how you made it?
It was the byproduct of some creative magic, I demurred, a spell I improvised to secure the safe birth of my son. Again, should we have the time and resources, I would love to explore the topic. I find it more than a little interesting from a thaumaturgical perspective, but there is the matter of the genocidal goblin head.
We are investigating that, assured Lord Lethalon. If the abomination has a weakness, it will be found. For now, it and its people occupy but a small province in the mountains.
And a third of Gilmora, I reminded him, far from contained. Sherul's forces roam virtually unchecked, and those forces now include dragons. That got their attention. They knew that, of course, but the Alka Alon were well aware of the destructive powers of the Saurian killers. They themselves had suffered dragon fire in past ages.
Still, the incursion is an inconvenience, not a tragedy,
Lady Ladas insisted. Dragons in particular are uncooperative and difficult to use in war. His forces are not insignificant, but they are crude. Well within your new kingdom's ability to meet. I had my doubts about that, but I kept my mouth shut. If King Rard did put every knight in the field, I'm certain we could overwhelm the Gavanni legions. But at what cost? 1 million widows and orphans left behind? Social upheaval never before seen in the duchies? Not to mention the matter of a lack of political will. Rard was having a hard enough time extending his authority inside the kingdom, much less projecting it out. He was not in a position to lead that kind of initiative. It would go better if we had allies, I reiterated. The weapons you gave us were decisive in the Battle of Cambrian, but that was a skirmish compared to what lies ahead. Our reports say that Sherul is emptying his Dark Valley and preparing a mighty campaign. His minions loot northern Gilmora, capturing its people for sacrifice or slavery, preparing the region as a staging ground to attack the heart of the kingdom. He is building depots and garrisoning captured castles all along the timber and cotton roads. Every high mage we can field against that invasion is a victory. You want snowstone. I want Irionite. It was a breach of etiquette to bring up such matters, but I wanted to inspire a particular reaction, and I was successful.
We did not call you here to barter like Tal Alon wives in a market, said Lady Micrethiel, scandalized.
I know. You tree folk don't do things that way, I soothed, but I have little time and a great task ahead. For good or ill, the gods have seen fit to gift me with this resource, and I will use it as I can. And since I have the only snowstone mine on Kalador, if you want it, you have to talk to me. But, I said,
as I saw several of them begin to get upset with me. I think I can sweeten the deal. Snowstone was not the only gift I was given on that night.
Pentandra, send in Guri with the chest, I ordered mind to mind.
A moment later, the Karshak came in bearing a small redwood chest, made especially for the task. That was the source of Dara's discomfort. The grinning Karshak stone singer opened it with exaggerated ceremony, revealing 5 soft silk bags. I took one and handed it to each of the lords. A small gift from the Mage Lord of Sevendor, I said as I passed them out. 5 waystones, each set within a flower of silver. These are apophyllite crystals, hidden within my mountain and enchanted in the same fashion as the snowstone. They are jewels of especial power, as they reduce the magical resistance in their vicinity to nothing. But more importantly, Master Guri assures me that each of them is essentially a portable waypoint, I explained as they opened their presents, allowing the song spell of transport to work anywhere. That is a wonder I have never read of in all the Alka-Allon epics, and these are but a few of the many unique gems Master Guri has discovered within my holding.
This is a noble gift,
Lord Aratas declared, his alien eyes twinkling with excitement as he examined his jewel.
And you say there are others?
A goodly supply, I agreed. These are but the finest specimens. Nor are they the only type of gem to be arcanely transformed. Clear quartz, milky quartz, all manner of crystals were changed by the spell into truly unique stones. We have only begun studying them and determining their properties, but they continue to amaze. Our initial thaumaturgical surveys are promising. We may have stones that can bend time or space, gems that can transform and twist the nature of reality, jewels that possess unique powers, some, no doubt, too subtle for my limited lore. But my mountain of snowstone has a lot to offer.
This alters the situation,
Lord Letheran admitted reluctantly.
Truly, these are magnificent artifacts. Master Guri, you support Master Menelan's claims?
He vastly understates the matter, agreed Guri. There are pockets we have yet to explore, but the trove recovered so far is... Well, it had my granddad in tears, he said solemnly. When he sang the mountain, it nearly broke him, so moved was he.
Still, we are not merchants,
Lady Ladas said sternly. Nor do I ask you to be, I agreed respectfully. But we are in a difficult place, and we fight a foe we know little about, one who outmatches us. And we do it with scavenged Irionite. If nothing else, help us arm our war magi to slow the dead god's advance. If you have found my gifts at all worthy, consider doing a kindness to us in return, as is proper among both our peoples.
Do you fully understand what you ask?
Asked Lady Ladas, looking up from her shiny new jewelry. The last time Irionite was prevalent in Humani society, you oppressed each other with it until you forced yourselves to give it up.
I wish I could say your folk have matured since then, added Lord Letheran, distastefully, but in truth you have grown more barbarous over time, not less.
You are not wrong. The old magocracy was a high point in human civilization, and if we did not face the threat we do, I would not ask. Already I am tasked with the regulation of the High Magi, and I find it difficult and perplexing. Every High Mage is a potential disaster I am sworn to protect my people from. Adding more for me to oversee is not a pleasant idea. I thought of my marble board back in Sevendor. I was already overwhelmed by the task. Why was I adding more? Yet we have no choice but to accept the burden and contend with the crises as they come, because over our horizon lies the shadow, and if we do not have the weapons to fight it, we are lost anyway. Unless you folk can step in and help us end the threat, I added hopefully. If anyone on Calador could do it, it was the Alka-Allon. They were the masters of magic. Yet none of them looked particularly optimistic at the idea.
You could step in and end the threat, couldn't you? I asked, when no one answered me.
It would be difficult, agreed Lord Letheren, but not impossible, at least in theory. That was one reason why we assembled this council, to assess the threat. We understand the danger better than you do, but we are dealing with something new in our experience. There have been other abominations, but none have raised armies. None have captured a Malapar of high degree, and none have operated with the level of intelligence this Gervan has shown. The appearance of Snowstone in such a timely manner, especially with your personal involvement, suggests other forces are at work, added Lord Harathel. The nature of the substance suggests the involvement of the divine. Human gods have a history of entangling themselves in the strands of fate on Kalador. With two such unpredictable forces at play, it is wise to proceed cautiously.
Proceed cautiously. Faster, I urged. I'm not asking for legions of Alka Alon to march by our side. I'm just asking for a few pebbles to help us slow him down while you are deliberating, and more advice and technical assistance, so that we can mount a credible defense.
Have we not provided you an adequate embassy?
Ladas asked. It's a start, I agreed. Lady Ithalia and the others have been invaluable. We could not have won the Battle of Cambrian without their assistance. But we need more than that. I know that Snowstone presents an alluring possibility for research. I know that there are those among your folk who favor more direct involvement in the war. I know that your people have suffered at the hands of the Gavanni. And I know that you have Kalador's best interests in mind. All I ask is that while you cautiously investigate the situation, you allow us the opportunity to defend ourselves.
We will continue to discuss this between ourselves after the evening meal, our host announced, as a chime rang in the distance. Thank you for your testimony, Master Menelan. The Council will summon you again when we have come to some decision.
Chapter 4 Allies and Enemies.
So how did they like them?
Pentandra asked quietly, as we walked toward the Hall of Hospitality. She knew my plan to bribe the Alka along with the Apophyllite, and she heartily approved. The gifts. They love them. They're like children when they see something they like. Unmitigated joy. And as bribes go, it definitely changed the mood of the discussion. Unique magical jewels were just too shiny to pass up, but I faced a lot more opposition in there than I expected. There was a lot going on that I did not understand. Politics and history, no doubt, but we've got to know more about who we're dealing with. That council wasn't much help. I still don't know who among them are allies and who are enemies.
Such things are subtle when it comes to the tree folk. I was hoping to overhear some gossip while we were waiting to help you out, Penny said, looking around to see who could overhear her. But it's difficult if you don't know the language. They use human speech when they speak to us, but half the time when they're together they don't even use words when they communicate. They sing to each other, and I have no context at all for their music, she admitted. It's frustrating, but Dara and I had a good time trying to figure out the local politics by observation.
Any insights? I asked, as I took a pipe out of a pouch and packed it.
The Avalanti are definitely the lower class here, almost servile, with a few exceptions. The Versarotti, which are the ones with the hair plaits, are far less numerous, but universally deferred to. Of course, without the benefit of clothes, it's difficult to tell which Alka are which, but they're individual enough when you use mage sight. And the Avalanti are a little shorter, I think.
I hadn't thought of that, but it made sense. Using mage sight, that is. Any other helpful conclusions? I asked, lighting my pipe with a cantrip and taking a deep draw. I felt relief that my part of the council was over, but suddenly a lot more anxiety about how I did.
I'd really love to spend a month here just breathing. Min, I don't know what it is exactly, but there is some wholesomeness here that makes everything rich and vibrant. Magic, but pervasive. I feel it everywhere.
Her face was flushed and her eyes burned with excitement. That's how it is with the tree folk, I agreed ruefully. Amadia was like that, but not to this extent.
The forest refuge felt like a fine spray. This is more like a waterfall. It's like you could spend every moment just enjoying your existence, and the days would slip away. And I wouldn't mind one bit. I suppose that's why the Alka-Alon realms were always so perilous to humans in the epics, she pointed out. When every breath you take satisfies you like a banquet meal, it's difficult to concentrate.
It would make a pleasant honeymoon destination, I agreed, but that's not helpful.
Well, I can confirm your theory on their magical coordination, she added, as we stepped into yet another glorious garden that led to the Hall of Hospitality. I've watched several work crews pass by while we were waiting for you. Any time more than two of them got together to do something, there was a coordination effect. They all worked in perfect step, like they had practiced for hours. There was no apparent initiation of it, like an officer calling his troops to order. They just did it.
We interrupted our conversation when Ithalia announced it was time to lunch, and ushered us into a long hall of breathtaking beauty where we were to dine, at which important Alka-Alon had already begun to congregate. While it was as Alkan as Amaras had been, it was different in style from the rustic tree-folk refuge. The stone pillars that supported the roof were carved in the shape of spiral tree trunks, Natavia, of course, but far more stylized and less naturalistic than what I remembered from Amaras. The vaulted roof twinkled with dozens of slowly moving teardrop-shaped mage lights. There was no fire in the hall, but the air was warmer than the cool mountain spring air outside. I was still glad of my mantle. When everyone around you is naked, it makes you feel cold just looking at them. We were led by our emissaries to the center of the room. There we were seated in groups of five or six around small tables radiating out from a larger round center table at which the principals of the council were seated. The chairs were mere cushioned stools, and I did not look forward to perching on one with my knees near my cheeks, but then I saw that they had prepared a table for us in advance, with human-fashioned chairs of proper size. As we were seated, the host addressed us, sang a blessing, and thanked us all for our presence. I noticed that he was wearing the silver chain and the jewel I had given him. They all were, even Lord Eritas.
"Looks like they enjoy their pretties," chuckled Master Guri, a growl of satisfaction in his voice. "I knew they would. It is said you cannot go wrong flattering the vanity of an Alkan lord."
"Or the avarice of a Karshak," Lady Ithalia noted dryly. "Please excuse me while I speak to the steward of the hall."
"You two behave," Pentandra reproved in a sharp whisper. "We're guests here. They do look quite fetching, though. One of your folk did the settings?"
"My cousin Kryn," nodded the Karshak stone singer. "Not the smoothest stone in the pile, but the kid has talent when it comes to metalwork. The Chaka love those simple floral settings." Chaka, I'd come to learn, as Master Guri and his folk had built the Alkan refuge atop Matin's helm, was a native Karshak term for Alka-Alon, though not a particularly flattering one. I think it meant pompous, or something along that line. Master Guri leaned in, almost conspiratorially.
"Nice work in council, Min," he added approvingly. "When they opened those little bags, I thought their eyes would fall out. They were all impressed. But I'm not certain 'tis enough. Lord Letheran isn't going to forget his enmity over a pretty stone, although he'll keep the pretty stone, and I doubt you moved Lord Aratas much more than an inch."
"You don't build a fortress in a day," I reminded him, as I watched, as Ithalia went to speak to one of the stewards about our care, probably reminding him what we ate. The Alka-Alon all seemed to be eating from a common bowl in the middle of the table, filled with fruits, steamed vegetables, and wholesome thoughts. I was craving ham.
"I just needed them to see me as a valuable resource, not as a miscreant Humani mage. If they know what I have, and they want more, then maybe they'll stop being condescending long enough to actually help us out. I wasn't exaggerating about the embassy's help. We could not have defeated the dragon without Alkan assistance."
"They are powerful allies," agreed Master Guri, sagely, out of Ithalia's hearing, but likely not the dozens of other Alka-Alon in the room. "But beware your entanglements with them. Alka-Alon politics is notoriously vicious and sophisticated.
I suppose when you live damn near forever, you have time to really think about how to be subtle, petty and vindictive.
Like it or not, you've been thrust into the centre of it,
Lady Ithalia said, approaching our table as the first course was served.
Your gift in council was unexpected, Master Minolan, but well received. The steward was just remarking to me about the graciousness of the gift, and your presentation was, while it was coarse, in some ways, it was effective. The council was swayed, at least, not to try to attempt to take your sphere from you, I think.
A validation of their wisdom, I agreed solemnly. I'm not inclined to give it up.
They also think of you as a potential ally and emissary to the Humani. Those, too, are good things.
Only if it works to our advantage. I appreciate the fact that they think I'm a stalwart fellow with an open hand, and that I know a king and a couple of dukes. But what I really need
is being taken into account.
Ithalia interrupted.
Master Minolan, the council understands what you wish, but it will not act until it feels it is properly informed. They will hear from the Wilderlands representatives next, and tonight they hear the tales of the Kasari emissaries, and those of the Valley Folk. Master Guri will testify tomorrow morn. Other agents will report. Other emissaries will take counsel, and in the meantime the council will deliberate. Impatience would not be prudent,
she warned.
No doubt you will be spoken to privately at tonight's reception by those who wish to hear your counsels more closely.
I understand, I sighed, as the soup course was laid in front of me. I just want this to be productive. I'm just missing the Chepstow Spring Fair for this, after all. I do enjoy the clowns.
You jest,
she accused, taking a seat at our table.
While I was not able to attend council with you, I did speak to a few friends. Perhaps it would interest you in what was being said?
Ithalia, more than any of the other Alka Alon, had been sympathetic to the human cause, partially because I had helped rescue her and a band of Alka Alon refugees from a goblin attack, and partially because of some native affection for our race. I had encouraged good relations with her on that account. She had been very forthcoming in explaining the intricacies of Alka Alon politics when she could.
There is news,
she reported in a hushed whisper. Nearly all the refugees in the Wilderlands have been evacuated now, yet thousands were captured by the Abomination and taken into shadow, it is said. Many are missing, among them the daughter of the Aronin of Amadia, Amaras. It is feared she is captured, though it is also rumored she is lost or in hiding. She was evacuating Amaras the last time I saw her, I told her.
That is known,
Ithalia said, worriedly,
but disappeared from her folk soon after, claiming an errand. She has not been seen since. Her loss would be grievous to many. Is she that important?
Asked Pentandra, curious.
She represents one of three of the last lines of the old Avalanti dynasties,
Ithalia confirmed.
The woodland folk, you might say. One that bears a great and terrible legacy. One that now falls to her now that the Aronin is dead. That means more than you might think. She is heir to much in our realm, and she has significant personal admiration among the younger folk. Losing Amaras would be devastating to some. Losing her to Shadow would be catastrophic. The council fears the worst,
she added apologetically. That's helpful, I nodded, suddenly worried about the beautiful Alkan maiden who I'd met on the eve of her land's destruction. Any other news?
Snowstone,
she said simply.
It has enchanted the minds of my folk, Master Minolan. They delight in it in a way they have rarely done, and sing new songs of its beauty. They are mystified by its origin, but they take great pleasure in its mysteries.
Aye, it's great stuff,
Guri dismissed, though he had been foremost in singing its praises, literally.
But what's it worth?
It has great value,
agreed Ithalia.
I am deemed fortunate to be so near it on such a regular basis. Many have asked to make pilgrimage to the mountain.
I sighed. This was getting frustrating. I won't turn away the tourist traffic, but I'm not here to arrange excursions while the kingdom burns.
I know, Master Mineland,
she agreed gravely. There are several who would happily lend their aid directly, but fear doing so, lest they invite the displeasure of the council in acting before it has made a decision. It does not help that those who are so enthusiastic propose lending aid in controversial ways.
Fighting alongside of humans is controversial.
Teaching Elka Alon magic to humans,
she corrected.
And employing prescribed song spells, transgenic enchantments in particular. Those who favour the Humani also tend to favour more liberal use of magics the council considers dangerous.
What? Like your slightly taller, curvier, more bountiful form? I asked. She paused, and probably would have blushed in human form. Their association with us, base Humani, had given them a little insight into our sexuality and our sexual humour. Ithalia had certainly noted just how much male attention she and her fellow emissaries had gotten since they arrived.
That is one manifestation,
she agreed,
but there are others, more subtle and more dangerous. Such enchantments were poorly used in the past, and there are valid reasons for being wary of their use even in crisis. I doubt the council would even consider such things if the situation were not grave.
So how many potential allies are we talking about?
Asked Pentandra.
A few hundreds so far, perhaps 1,000. But there are some notable Alcan among them. The spellmonger's gift went far to attract the attention of more, and your character is greatly admired, even among those who dislike the Humani. But among others, you are seen as arrogant and brash, an ignorant savage barely above the level of the Gavani you fight. No offence,
she added. None taken, I grunted. It wasn't an insult. It was intelligence.
I don't see them as that advanced, actually,
Guri mused. I've lived among them for a few years now, and they aren't any better than the average Gervan, and their mating customs.
Weird. No other word for it,
affirmed Guri, stroking his beard.
If we did things the way you do, we'd...
I doubt now is an appropriate time to discuss the subject, gentlemen,
Pentandra interrupted,
although I would greatly appreciate hearing your insights another time, for professional reasons. But the point Lady Ithalia is making is that we have opponents on the council as well as proponents. We must try to weaken or nullify their voices, or we shall receive little help from the Elka Alon.
Those same opponents argue that you have received too much already,
Ithalia agreed.
Lord Letheran is of the belief that the abomination is not of Alcan concern. It is a Humani problem. Lord Eratas knows that it is of concern, but so loathes the Humani that he would see the shadow fall over your lands in spite.
Ouch, I winced. What did we do to him?
It was long ago, generations by your count, but the Lord has a long memory and great influence. If he was not immune from the unexpected pleasure of your gift, he was especially wary. He suspects treachery from the Humani.
That's just good thinking, I quipped. I don't really trust me myself. The gift was given in good faith, however.
I understand that, Master Minellan. Convincing Lord Eratas and Lord Letheran might prove more difficult.
I'll just have to be particularly charming, then.
You will get the opportunity,
she agreed.
After our meal, there will be a, you would call it a reception, a time for informal talk, stories, and song.
And wine, I hope. What could I possibly say that would charm such opponents? Ithalia considered.
They dislike and distrust the Humani for different reasons. Letheran is a xenophobe with a vendetta. Eratas is jealous of his realm, and finds you folk distastefully ephemeral. Both have been strongly in favour of receding from the realm of human affairs, and are reluctant to renew relations. But they have grudgingly allowed the volunteers, who stood by your side, to do so. They disapproved of our intervention at Cambrian, but excused it. After the fact,
she added guiltily.
Huh. Neither of those are very easy to work with, but I'll see what I can do.
Isn't Lord Aratas involved... simply by proximity. I understood that Anfatiel was in the Mindens, somewhere.
It is also an impregnable fortress,
on an island in a mountain lake, surrounded by a great gorge. The five waterfalls that fall into the gorge produce a constant array of spectra, rainbows, over the gorge that Aretas uses to carry the protective magic that both guards his realm and cloaks it from sight.